Hello, students, and welcome to the Eccentric Podcast, a Kepler Student Life production. I'm Prophet Joffrey Swaite, the giant educationist, and I'm here today with Haley Hasek, president of Poetry Club. Welcome, Haley.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Looking forward to this. Poetry is one of my passions, and I know it's one of yours. Now, this is only the second episode of the show, but I want to make it a habit to start every episode, even when the episode is about algebra or economics, to start with a poem. Have you brought in a poem to read to us today?
I have indeed. This poem is by John Keats. I actually used it to kick off Poetry Club. It's an excerpt from one of his longer poems, Endymion, but I love this poem. It goes like this. A thing of beauty is a joy forever. Its loveliness increases. It will never pass into nothingness, but still will keep a bower quiet for us and a sleep full of sweet dreams and health and quiet breathing. Therefore, on every morrow are we wreathing a flowery band to bind us to the earth. Spite of despondence, of the inhuman dearth of noble natures, of the gloomy days, of all the unhealthy and o'er-darkened ways made for our searching, yes, in spite of all, some shape of beauty moves away the pall from our dark spirits. Such the sun, the moon, trees old and young, sprouting a shady boon for simple sheep. And such are daffodils, with the clear world they live in and clear rills that for themselves a cooling covert make against the hot season. The mid-forest brake, rich with a sprinkling of fair musk rose blooms. And such, too, is the grandeur of the dooms we have imagined for the mighty dead. All lovely tales that we have heard or read, an endless fountain of immortal drink pouring unto us from the heaven's brink.
A wonderful ending. That passage that you chose, that excerpt, it starts with a very famous line. You know, that a thing of beauty is a joy forever. That's a very famous line. And one of the things that, you know, is wonderful about classical education is that it provides a common Western language. And that quote, you know, you see it referred to everywhere, or you know, I suppose less often these days. But I was watching a rugby game in an English league the other day, and an announcer used that line, a thing of beauty is a joy forever, as he was announcing the rugby.
That is so funny. I've heard it too. I've heard it, I think, in some different books. And I mean, I love it. So whenever I found this poem, I was really excited. Oh, that's where it comes from.
Yeah. So you kicked off Poetry Club reading that poem. I'd love to hear why that particular poem, and then also just why you wanted to start a poetry club. What drove you to such extremes?
Well, I chose this particular poem because I felt like it was really relevant if we thought of poetry as being that thing of beauty. Why do we even study poetry? If we consider this poem, he tells us that a thing of beauty is a joy forever, that this poetry is going to benefit us in the long run. So I thought it was a really great one, just to kind of instill a purpose in our meetings, to say we don't just come here, I mean, just to have fun. This is why we read poetry. I decided to start Poetry Club because I've been searching for a community for a while that shared the same passion I did. I mean, specifically poetry. I'm so passionate about poetry, and I had been really looking for a community where I could share my own poetry and where I could give feedback on others, just kind of this close-knit little group. And I tried a couple of different things, but none of them really ended up working out. And I remember one day I was kind of talking over this with my mom, and she looked at me and said, "Why don't you start a poetry club on Kepler? Like, you can contact Mr. Swaite. I mean, maybe they have a teacher." And I was like, that is a perfect idea. So I think I contacted you like that day or the next. And then also Mr. Clark Widener, who teaches poetry at Kepler. And both of you seemed excited about it. Both of you so kindly agreed to help me start it. And I mean, now Poetry Club is up and running. We have a great time. We have events planned, projects planned, and I finally have this community. I'm so happy that it turned out the way it did.
That's awesome. Yeah, you know, it's cool to be able to leverage just an online existence to get something you may not have done, right? Like starting a poetry club in your own town might not have been on the table. But then, you know, hey, there's a ready group of people who are willing and able. I'd love to know how poetry, like what poetry club is like. You mentioned that you wanted to be able to share some of your own poetry. So is poetry club more the enjoyment of the greats or enjoyment of finding obscure poets? Or is it more, let's share some of our poetry and critique and support? What happens in poetry club?
So we try to do kind of a mix of all of those things. So we meet twice a month, and our first meeting of the month, we look at a poem every time we meet, kind of go through the poem, analyze the poem, talk about what it makes us think about, what it makes us feel. But then we call the first meeting of our month, those are our fun meetings, where people bring their own poetry and share their own poetry. And we have some amazing poets in Poetry Club. I have been astounded by some of the poetry I've read, all of the poetry I've heard. And everyone gives feedback. Everyone's always very encouraging. But that's kind of our first meeting. And then the second meeting, we tend to pick a longer poem. And
is that the meeting you call your not fun meeting?
I didn't know what to call it because they're all fun.
Okay.
I'd just say they're more serious, I guess.
Okay, the earnest meeting.
There we go. That's a really good word for it. So our more earnest meetings, we dig in a little bit and maybe pick a longer poem, analyze it a little bit more. But then if there's time at the end, if we finish up a little early, we kind of want to put what we've been looking at away and just enjoy a little time together. We either just decide, hey, let's share some poetry. That's always on the table. Or sometimes we have just great conversations about the collections of poetry that we have.
Okay.
People will pull out books that they borrowed from the library and say, look what I found this week. I mean, it's just time to enjoy sharing with each other this passion.
That sounds wonderful. I think about, you know, when I was your age, I was exploring the world of poetry, writing some of my own. I still write poetry. And just the thought of being able to have access to a group like that is really wonderful. I didn't have that at your age. And so for you to be able to have that, just the thought of it makes me happy.
You should come.
I will. I will. Of course I will. Yes. So Haley is laying down a guilt trip on me because I was instrumental in starting this club and supporting Haley. And I haven't come to a meeting yet. But that will soon be remedied, Haley.
I understand. I understand you're very busy.
Well, so you know, I've got favorite poems, favorite poets. You surely must as well. So who are some of the people that you most love? And then this is kind of a separate question. As a writer yourself, who are some of the people who have most influenced you?
Oh, wow.
You thought you'd come onto the show and it would be like easy breezy. No, I'm coming with the hard-hitting questions.
Man, come on. Well, I can definitely say some of the ones that I love. There is one poet in particular that I actually recently discovered through Poetry Club, and he's come to be one of my favorites, if not my favorite. That is Gerard Manley Hopkins.
Oh, my favorite. Awesome.
I knew you loved him. So actually, you said something on our channel for Poetry Club. I think you said something about his, he really plays to the strengths of English as a poetic language. Mm-hmm. And I mean, whenever I first really started digging into Hopkins, that is exactly what I saw. You talked about his rhythms and alliteration. Again, he just has such a gift for that. Alliteration, rhythm, meter. His poetry just sounds like music. It is beautiful. But then apart from just the form and the way it sounds, he has so much hidden knowledge in his poems. Like you can take a poem of his and just piece it apart and find all sorts of little like hidden trinkets inside. And it gets me so excited. Actually, Poetry Club, even though we haven't met all that much, we've already analyzed two of Hopkins' poems. And it made me realize that I really love him. He also, there's a quote by Shelley, another poet. Poetry lifts the veil from the hidden beauty of the world and makes familiar objects be as if they were not familiar. And I feel like that's what Hopkins does. He attributes deeper meaning to ordinary objects. And that is something that I absolutely love.
Yeah, so, these ordinary things come up and surprise you with their glory.
Exactly. So definitely, definitely Hopkins. I'd also say that he's actually influenced me probably more than I realize, even though he's one of my more recent favorites, you might say. Mm-hmm. I think he probably has influenced me more than I realize. Sometimes I try and mirror his, he has very high prose. I don't know if that's the way you would put it, but the way he writes is just so beautiful that I look at my own poetry and I realize I want to have more of this high language in my own poetry. And so I've written a few like that, I think, just kind of really trying to,
You know, he's influenced me as well. And, you know, his poetry is beautiful. It's glorious. But it's quite serious. I would say that his influence comes out more for me in some of my lighter stuff. But, you know, it was really through reading him that I appreciated what English could do with its particular rhythms and strengths. And so, you know, when I'm writing some, you know, some lighter stuff, some more fun stuff, playing with the language, you know, I'm sort of informed by this poet. But there are others as well for you that are favorites. Who are a couple more?
Well, I actually, I really like some of C.S. Lewis's poetry.
Me too. Now, so there's a collection of his epic poetry and just a collection of his poems. I had trouble appreciating the epic poems. I don't know how you felt.
Well, I too have a collection of his regular poems and then his, epic poems, and I haven't really gotten into the other one. As a general rule, I'm not really attracted to epic poems as much as I am like more of the shorter poems. So I think I'm kind of with you. I like more of his shorter, regular poetry, not really like the giant ones.
Right.
I really like him for his, I feel like he often has kind of unconventional, almost wild ideas that he puts into poetry. And I really love that he'll have a poem that just has this crazy concept behind it, and I find it so fascinating, so interesting. And then I also love his use of Greco-Roman mythology. I think Mr. Postma often uses the term baptism, like he baptizes kind of the mythology, but he uses these myths to help convey truths, and they're often Christian truths, and I in a deeper way he uses them to convey these truths in a deeper way. I love the way that he does that.
Yeah, he has a poem. You know, it's soon it will be Christmas time, and he has one poem that you know that mentions great galactal lords, and it's this epic, huge poem. But it really is the way it moves in space. It starts with just the smallness of creation and expands out to cover the entire cosmos, and then it comes back to the nativity, to the manger. And it's just absolutely incredible how, you know, how he just very easily and naturally moves you through the entire universe in a couple of pages. And it's like you said, he has these weird ideas. Like if you've ever read the Space Trilogy from Lewis, I mean, he could be a pretty weird guy. It's just fun. Most people don't think of him as a poet, but his poetry can really take you for a ride.
I agree. I didn't even realize that he was a poet until not too long ago, whenever I saw a couple of his books and I just like grabbed them and ran to the cashier. Yes, I'm buying these.
quick. Yeah. Well, exactly. You know, it's beautiful to be talking to someone who's definitely, you know, in the age of discovery, the age of exploration, you know, thinking about all this poetry. And it makes me relive when I was, you know, doing the same things and running into new poets and new poems. Well, I thought so it would be fun. I knew you wrote poetry. Maybe we can trade poems. I have a poem that I've written here, and I thought I could read one to you, one of mine to you, and you could read one of yours to me and to the audience secretly listening in.
All right, that sounds great.
Okay. Shall I go first? Would you like to go first?
Whichever way you think.
Okay. Okay. I'll read mine first. Right. It's a playful little thing. It's called The Peace of Bees. Bees are the bug to write poems about. Bees are the bug to describe all the things. Bees are the bug who flit in and out. Bees are the bug whom out from truth rings. Bees are the bug about whom it could be said, the buzz of bees, the busy of bees, the business of bees. Also, it could be said, the work of bees, the love of bees, the devotion of bees, even the peace. Bees are the bugs who work for others, and bees are the bugs who love you.
That was beautiful.
No, thank you.
I love all the alliteration in it. It reminded me of one of like old book of practical cats. Sorry.
Yeah, so you're mentioning old Possum's Book of Practical Cats.
Awesome. Yes. It just reminded me of some of the poems in there.
Yeah, for sure. I love that collection as well. In fact, I made my Spanish 3 class work from that book. I pulled a poem from that book and asked them to translate it into Spanish. Which was mean of me, but I love those poems so much. The T.S. Eliot has a collection, you know, for the audience, of cat poems that are just an absolute blast.
They're really, really.
Well, it's your turn, Haley.
Okay. This poem is unfortunately not very playful. It's called.
No worries. It's earnestness is wonderful, and earnestness is most beautiful in the young. So I'm glad you've brought something earnest.
Thank you. This is called Doubtless Love. What, my soul, dost not thou trust that holy love lives? One might surmise thou hadst ne'er beheld two sisters bent in work conjoined, or still the sky at break of morn, or yet the ray of sunshine shed from blessed stranger's face. Thou hast no room to doubt. Turn, shift, and see the truth that thou may know, even as thou art known. Hast thou ne'er known a fond embrace, or heard the eternal poet's song? Hast thou forgotten night's fair grace, her train of stars that sweeps along? Undo thine dubious slant, O soul. Why must thou ever give to doubt? Hast thou ne'er drunk the holy wine in overwhelming floods poured out? This wine we taste and love and give brings life to us and claims love lives.
Oh, wonderful. So this is about communion with God in a sense.
It is.
So talk to me about the wine. What does the wine mean to you?
The
as
wine.
A 16 or 17 year old.
I remember whenever I was writing this, it sounds kind of awkward, but just kind of struggling with the doubt that love even exists in this world. And so this was kind of a poem. I mean, obviously I start out talking to my soul. So I'm trying to convince my own soul of the existence of love. And I kind of run through some examples of the love we see in the world around us. But then, of course, you have to end at the most powerful example of love, the embodiment of love. And so this wine, to the blood of Jesus as wine, is something we can ingest. It's something that is power drunk into us. So it's not just blood that we might touch, it's wine that we can taste, that we can feel on our tongues, that we can, it fills us with fire. And I love the metaphor of Christ's blood as wine. And so I wanted to put that in there.
Yeah. I think poetry by Christians ought to be incarnational. So I absolutely love what you did there. I mean, you're dealing with a metaphysical issue, a great doubt. And to not only be poetic in your addressing of that, but then to be incarnational as well. That, you know, that's got to be the answer for us. We have to find the answers to these things in a human way. Jesus Christ became a man. We live as people with bodies. And I think there's a temptation sometimes for artists of every kind to abstract everything, to make everything Gnostic, spiritual in an abstract sense, mm-hmm. instead of like C.S. Lewis it talks about how something that is spiritual is more real, mm-hmm. right? Like Jesus walked through walls because he was thicker and more real than the walls, not because he was ghostly, right? Like that thought is one that's always delighted me. But yeah, I absolutely love that you've taken this incarnational, like life-giving angle.
Thank you.
Well, you know, so we've talked about Poetry Club and poets that we enjoy. You know, I could have given a list of my own, but it's happened that every poet you named was a poet I loved as well. You know, we shared some of our own poetry. I'd love to close with maybe your thoughts on how poetry blesses people. Why ought people to read poetry? Or why ought someone who's never written or read poetry join Poetry Club? So the question is, how does poetry bless people, and who ought to read poetry?
Well, the poem that I opened with, A Thing of Beauty is a Joy Forever, mm-hmm. by Keats, there's a line in there that says, talking about this thing of beauty, which I say we can look at as poetry. The line says, its loveliness increases. It will never pass into nothingness. So I think you mentioned Lewis's Space Trilogy earlier, and I recently read the first book, and I believe that Lewis kind of conveys this message that, or one of the characters in the book says something that, like, a poem is not, it's not finished whenever you finish reading it. That's whenever it's just starting. It becomes whole. The culmination of it is whenever you mull over it in your heart. So this idea of the loveliness increasing as we go out into our lives and we've embodied the words of the poets, or not embodied, sorry, ingested the words of the poets, then as we go out into our lives, we find that their words are true, or we find situations which recall them to mind. And the loveliness does not diminish with time. It grows with time. This is why I'm a big advocate of memorizing poetry. I believe it's a great blessing. There's also... You can also think of poetry as being like a catharsis. I've thought of this a bunch. I know it's cathartic for me to read and write poetry. But as human beings, we long to be understood. And so whenever you find that one great poem, you know, that just tells how you feel, in a way that you could never tell it, it's very cathartic. I feel like this is another reason why we should memorize poetry. Whenever you find that one great poem, It helps me to memorize things and then repeat them to myself in order to be able to analyze how I myself am feeling. But then I also don't want people to make the mistake of thinking that poetry is merely like a selfish catharsis, because I feel like it's so much more than that. There's something about the power of poetry that I can't even really explain. But I believe that poetry has a special place in God's kingdom to drive back the darkness. George MacDonald wrote The Princess and the Goblin. And in The Princess of the Goblin, he has this idea that poetry and songs, the goblins cannot stand poetry or songs. And it's a tool that the characters continually use to fight against them. I absolutely love that idea. So I feel like, in conclusion... Poetry makes things more lovely. Poetry helps analyze our own feelings and express them. And poetry helps drive back darkness.
Yeah, I love that you were very clear and specific. I was actually going to ask the question if you hadn't brought it up. You know, you talked about poetry being cathartic and can be very personal, and you connect to it personally. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's something universal about poetry. Mm-hmm. Any speaker of that language, poetry, you know, if poetry is elevated words, and Jesus Christ is the word, you know, there's something, you know, poetry and song they're connected to each other. Music does something to the hearer, even when it's unexpected. Mm-hmm. Right? Like you're walking down the street, you overhear a snatch of a song. Well, you know, poetry can do the same thing, where it elicits a reaction, whether you want it to or not. Sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. Where, you know, if you hear something, you know, being read out or being performed, if you see a quote somewhere as you're reading an article, it can move you in this heightened way, almost against your will, right? Because it is such a crafted thing. It's not just an argument, but there's something emotional and even spiritual that poetry can elicit, even through simple devices like alliteration, like rhyme, right? Like rhythm. And, you know, you just find that the memorable rhythmic phrase provokes something in your heart, and you can't do anything about it. Like it's going to elicit that reaction. And I love that poetry can have that sort of power. And I hope that more Christians have an appreciation for poetry and choose to write some of their own, even if they never really do anything with it, to be handling your language as someone who, you know, is, you want to proclaim the gospel, you want to be a person of the word, and sort of handle words with thought and with care, with purpose, is such an important skill. Poetry is part of that.
I completely agree.
Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation. I've loved your thoughts on poetry generally. I think you've got a great future as a poet. You know, whatever path you decide to take with that, you know, maybe it really will be something that is simply something for you to build a richer life, or maybe it's something that you decide to get out there. But speaking of getting out there, we do have the Kepler Eccentric magazine, and we encourage students of Kepler to submit their poetry, their essays, their photographs, their drawings, whatever work you guys have done. I encourage you guys to submit to the magazine.
Yes. That's the magazine is the best. And I mean, I'm also on student council, so we have so much fun putting it together, but just seeing the talent of all the people who send in. And then I think you mentioned, Mr. Swate, that people have even commented on just the talent they see in the magazine. I mean, I can attest to it, definitely.
Yeah. We've got a great student body at Kepler. Well, Haley, I really appreciate you coming in. Thanks so much. And I'll look forward to seeing you in Poetry Club.
Yes. Yeah, you better come. Thank you so much for having me. This is the best. And I love getting to talk about poetry with anyone and everyone. So, I mean, if you're thinking about joining to our audience, if you're thinking about joining Poetry Club, feel free to message me at any time. We would love to have you. We're fairly informal. We love poetry, and we love God, and we love each other, and we have a great time.
Wonderful. Thanks for being here, and so long, everybody.